George, it's beautiful reading from Isaiah. It was not the one that I expected. prepared my sermon on. It might have been that I had turned two pages in my diary, quite possibly. And so, with your forgiving permission, I will read the passage that makes sense of the sermon I'm about to preach, if that's okay. It was from Isaiah chapter 41, starting with verse 13. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, do not fear, I will help you. Do not fear, word Jacob, you insect Israel. I will help you, says the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. Now I will make of you a threshing sledge, sharp, new, and cunning teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and crush them, and you shall make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the tempest shall scatter them. Then you shall rejoice in the Lord, in the Holy One of Israel, you shall glory. When the poor and the needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights, and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. I will put in the wilderness cedar, the acacia, the myrtle, and the olive. In the desert, the cypress, the plain, and the pine together, so that all may see and know, all may consider and understand that the hand of the Lord has done this, the Holy One of Israel has created it. So I hope that this will now make a little bit more sense. Somewhere in my parents' house is a box. It is about a foot square, and it's made of brown cardboard, faded with age. It's not my box, and it wasn't their box. It came to live with them when we cleared out my grandparents' house well over 20 years now. When we opened it, it was chock-a-block full of old photos. Black and white ones, sepia-toned ones, those ones that used to be printed on postcards for the family. Many had names and dates written on the back. Many of them remain a complete mystery. But there is one photo that I specifically and vividly remember seeing, one I've never seen before, and one that I've very rarely seen since. And I'm hoping it is still in that box when I next get to look. And it was one of my great-grandfather. He was a farm labourer and worked in the fields not so very far from here, in Nelsworth, just the other side of Stroud. My family haven't really travelled all that far, have we, in that four generations. But this particular photo of him is one of him at work in the fields with a horse. He worked with the horse and the plough turning the fields, just like the farmers of that particular patch of land had done the years before, and in much the same way that ploughing had been done ever since humans have discovered it. I wonder what those humans of the first class, what my grandfather would have made when they looked at the changes to farming today. GPS positioned seed sowing tractors, huge combine harvesters, and those enormous balers we get stuck behind on the roads. And this isn't just about me telling you about my nostalgia, but it jumped into my mind for two reasons as I read today's Old Testament, or the one that I thought it was, and the Gospel reading. The first was that I am struck by how much the world has changed. It is a very different place from even when I was young. Such change in such a relatively short period of time, some good, some for the better, but often change that we don't like, change that we don't expect, because we like security, patterns, rules, frameworks. Change is unsettling, whether that's because we mistrust the technology or we fear the repercussions of the change. And sometimes, just like we found this year, it upsets our whole way of life and really challenges our expectations. My second thought is really much, much simpler. And it was that connection between the image of my great-grandfather farming in the way of the bygone era, connecting with that farming and agricultural imagery and reading in Isaiah. That imagery, I think, is important when we come to think about the gospel. In that passage from Isaiah, God is talking to his people Israel. In the face of their enemies, God promises to be with them, to hold their hand. And then he switches to this metaphor. And he sees Israel as a threshing sledge, having new and sharp teeth, cutting through the stalks and crushing even the hills and the opposing mountains, shredding them, grinding them as the crops are threshed, separating grain from the stalk. And then he goes on with an image of winnowing, image of sifting, as Israel winnows the mountains and hills of the country, and the wind carries them away. That age-old process of separating the grain from the husks to make it usable. Isaiah uses that rich agricultural metaphor for a nation that knew how to farm. And so there are two meanings there. Challenge, expectation, change, and sifting and separation. And both of them come into our gospel interpretation today. I found the gospel quite an odd-looking passage, just those few short readings as our weekday lectionary often is. You really have to read the bit before and the bit after to make any sense of it at all. Now the whole section is about the relationship between John the Baptist and Jesus and how their tasks and their purposes are bound together. In Matthew's Gospel, where we meet today, we first met John in chapter 3. We find him living in the wilderness, that favourite Sunday school image of him clothed in camel hair and eating delicious honey and locusts. In other words, acting quite strangely, but not out of keeping with the ways of the prophet. And in that same chapter, John himself draws on the metaphor of winnowing to talk about the coming of the Messiah. The Messiah is coming to judge, to sort and to separate and to sift. Separate good from bad. Threshing and winnowing are not gentle tasks, full physical labour they are, as crops are beaten and thrown into the air to complete the harvest. The bits that aren't good, the husks, are just carried away by the wind. John understands his task as preparing people for the coming promised Messiah. And he knows exactly what he thinks the Messiah is going to be like. He has read the scriptures, he has built the picture, he has expectations. And he warns Jesus. And immediately John is shocked when Jesus asks John to baptize him. Surely that should be the other way around, John asks. But Jesus insists, we know the story. And he gives away the power, he gives away the right, the authority. Perhaps that might have been John the Baptist's first clue that this particular Messiah wasn't quite what he'd been expecting after all. So fast forward back to chapter 11 that we heard today. Things have moved on. There has been plenty of teaching by Jesus. We have Sermon on the Mount. There have been miraculous healings. Word is getting around about this Jesus and what he is doing and what he is saying. And John, who by this time is sitting in prison, gets to hear all about it. But he's still not sure. Jesus does not look like the Messiah he was expecting. And so The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news proclaimed to them. It is a direct challenge to John to rethink his expectations. Look again at your scriptures. Look again at what has formed your expectation of the Messiah. And see if Jesus might fit it after all, perhaps rather better than what you might have imagined. And as the crowd overhear this talk between Jesus and John's disciples, I wonder if they thought he'd effectively sent them away as, wrong, go away, you must try harder, perhaps, like a teacher might say to the child. But if the crowd think they're getting away with it, they can think again, because he turns back on them immediately afterwards. And he challenges the crowd by asking them what they think about John. That famous passage where he says, well, what did you go out to see? A reed bending in the wind? Someone wearing fine clothes? What did you expect when you went to see John? A prophet? Yes, said Jesus, you expected a prophet and you got a prophet. And you even got more than a prophet. And again, Jesus uses scripture to identify John and his actions. See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way for you. The promise from the Old Testament. The people might have expected a prophet. He did act and dress like one. But I wonder if the people expected that John was the prophet, that particular prophet that was going to be the one who came to prepare the way for the Messiah. And in that lies the challenge to the crowd. John is greater than all the prophets, Jesus says. He's just the latest in the long line of the law and the prophets and everything that this has been building up to. But he is the least in the kingdom of heaven. He stands at that point in the middle where things are going to turn. Things are going to change expectations. We don't know yet, when you read that moment in the story, what's going to happen. We know the end, but John didn't. He won't get to see the resurrection. He won't get to see the confirmation that Jesus is the Messiah. He won't get to see the end of the story. But Jesus says to the crowd, if you are willing to accept it, John is Elijah. That's Elijah in the Old Testament who was said to come back and prepare the way for the Messiah. Let anyone with ears listen, says Jesus. This expectation of Elijah's return means that they have to think carefully about what they think about John. And what they think about John then has implications for what they think about Jesus. Their expectations have been turned upside down, and they have a decision to make. And it really is the same decision that we have to make in our own life. The age-old question of who Jesus is. And 2,000 years on, it will take a few years, it's not always clear-cut. Not for people who've not met Jesus, and not even for those of us who have followed him faithfully for many years. Jesus does not stand in front of us like he does in this passage, and neither does John. challenged, sometimes uncomfortably so, but come out of it, recognizing Jesus all the more for it. And that is the work of a lifetime. It is not just one revelatory moment. But when life throws those curveballs at us that challenge our expectations of the people and the world that we see around us, we must continually return to that question: who is Jesus? And seek to recognise him once more. It can be hard work, it can be painful work, but by allowing our expectations to be challenged, we get to re-recognize